Heya, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Dylan Gregory.
And we host Backstage Gaming, a weekly podcast about video games and storytelling.
We both play pretend professionally.
Sometimes on stage with other people.
And sometimes alone in a soundproof room.
So join us every Monday while we talk about games, acting, and how a story comes together.
Backstage Gaming. Dramatic takes on your favorite games.
Part of the HP Video Game Podcast Network. This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
Hey, yeah, you. Did you know that ArtCast is on Patreon? Go check out patreon.com/ArtCast for ways to help out the show and get some sweet perks in return. It could be something small, such as our $1 tier to show your support. Or join one of our higher tiers to get a shout-out, pick an episode topic, or even be a part of the show as a special guest. Even just sharing our show to your friends goes a long way. Once again, that's patreon.com/ArtCast. Thanks for helping us, and keep it retro. Argonauts, and welcome to another Retro Gaming Podcast. This is episode 202 of the ArtCast. I am your host, David Gilton, and with me is a couple of very special guests. There is Jeremy Rowan of Ill Popcorn Podcast. So how's it going there, man?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And with us is also Hunter Bond of Berserk Studio. How's it going there, Hunter?
Hey, what's up, dude?
Hey, doing all right. We basically have you on here, Hunter, because we absolutely have to talk about Infernax, because this game absolutely wowed me during PAX East, amidst all the coronavirus craziness that was going on. At least not, it wasn't as crazy during PAX East anyway, but
right.
I remember, just kind of hearing about your game Infernax here and actually playing it and just being completely floored, and just, really looking forward to talking about it here, but also, to get my hands on it again for sure, so... But before we get into that, we want to get into some news. And speaking of coronavirus, because it's kind of taking over the news, it seems like, in every waking life these days. There is game sales and online gaming that has apparently been spiking because of coronavirus. And obviously, since people have to be quarantined and staying indoors, and people more and more anyway are taking it seriously, it seems, that means more time for gaming in this case. Certainly one great example of that seems is with the release of Animal Crossing. I don't think Nintendo could have planned for a better time for a game that, has historically been known to be beneficial for people's mental health, to come out at this time. So, in the CNET.com article here that I have in the show notes, there is some people that say that they're using Animal Crossing to celebrate birthdays, go on digital dates, and even hold makeshift weddings after real-world versions got canceled. So,
yeah. I've definitely seen some dates on my feed from friends.
Yeah, for sure. So, Hunter, let's have you start off here, actually. What is your take, with gaming being more popular than ever, it seems, with this whole pandemic going on?
I mean, I will say that I was talking to my dad, and I told him this is one of those few times where being a game, a studio who makes games might actually be a more stable job than average.
For sure, yeah. It's a sad truth, but yeah.
Yeah, I was I'm not excited about why that's true, but... For once, you don't really have to worry about me as much as if I had a more standard job right now. But
right.
Yeah, it makes sense. Once I realized that I was going to be indoors, I downloaded a bunch of free to play games on especially PlayStation, so that all of my friends who wanted to play stuff together, because one of the things you don't think about, right, is, oh, I want to see my friends and play with them now that we're all stuck indoors. But what game do we all have? Which is always a problem, right? Overwatch, right? Not everybody owns a copy of Overwatch. So if you want to hop in and play some matches, so I wouldn't be shocked to see Apex is probably doing record numbers right now.
Yeah, because, or like Fortnite or like PUBG or like any of those games, really. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like any free-to-play game where the barrier to entry is at least $0 to get in the door. I was playing Realm Royale. Did you guys ever play Realm Royale?
A little bit.
No, I've never actually heard of that game.
Yeah.
It should have worked. I think it was they didn't have like good long-term support for like Battle Pass and cosmetics like you kind of need. But in any case, like the point being is now that we're all stuck indoors, like obviously, like Animal Crossing, my girlfriend is deep in the paint. Like my island looks like a desolate wasteland by comparison to her beautiful, like paved, like island. But I think pretty much almost most of the day she'd been playing. So along with a lot of our friends. So are you guys both playing too, or
not Animal Crossing for me? But Jeremy, I was kind of curious what you were playing there during the pandemic.
Doom Eternal right now.
Nice.
My wife is the one that is playing Animal Crossing. So like I used to rip on Nintendo constantly. And then they announced the Switch and I was kind of like, okay. And then they were like, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is an exclusive. And I went, oh, you guys suck.
Kind of forced your hand a little bit there.
Right. So I went and bought it and I'm never going to see it again now. Like my wife came to me a couple of days ago and she's like, Animal Crossing's on Nintendo Switch? I was like, yeah, they released it. Next thing I know,
the beginning of the end.
Building her profile on my Switch.
That's exactly what happened to my coworker Mike. He was like, yeah, my girlfriend borrowed it to play Animal Crossing, so I think I have to buy a Switch Lite now.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like that Animal Crossing, specifically anyway, gets more people to buy Nintendo Switches or just like Nintendo consoles in general anyway, specifically for those games, really.
Oh, for sure.
You know, because we did an Animal Crossing episode not too long ago, and it was just kind of crazy, like with the amount of just like consoles, like for whatever new Animal Crossing game came out, like there's like a huge uptick of sales for people who just normally don't play games, but they just love Animal Crossing. So
it's almost like Pokemon, right? Like I can remember, I think it was when the 3DS came out, like there wasn't really a killer app for me until Pokemon came out, and it wasn't that I wanted to play that bad necessarily, but like all of my coworkers at the time. We're like, hey, we're all going to play. Like, Pokemon's a system seller for sure. You know, same thing with Animal Crossing, where people who would, like, basically pass on any AAA title coming along will go out of their way to buy the new console just so they can play the, like, newest version of, like, Pokemon or Animal Crossing or something.
God, if they cross those two franchises over.
No.
Don't give them any ideas, all right? Tom Nook, I choose you. But yeah, so all that is going on, and there's also like, the World Health Organization too has apparently gone out and has been like encouraging people actually to stay indoors and play video games of all things. So which is kind of funny to me because I actually do remember back when the World Health Organization they actually classified video game addiction as being a thing, which I had like huge issues with personally, just because I feel like video game addiction shouldn't be like its own specific thing. It's really just like, you know, screen addiction or internet addiction or whatever you could call it. That's more broadly in that sense. Like I think that's more accurate classification really of that sort of like disorder. But now all of a sudden you kind of like have to say, it's like, oh yeah, I should play games like as much as you can basically. So
unless it has like numbers in it, I don't pay attention to their opinions anymore. Cause like you said, they're like, don't play games. Wait, play games.
That's the same thing, man. I had a friend who linked me that when it, you know, first came out, and I thought my first response was, wait a minute, like, isn't the WHO the one who was trying to demonize us, like, what, 9 months ago? Like,
along with the mainstream media as well, yeah.
Of course. Well, that's the problem, right, is you get an organization like the WHO to say something that's a great soundbite, like, oh, video game addiction is real, and every hack website is going to blow it just to the end of time, and like... Like you were saying, I agree with you, you know, like I have a, like one of those personalities where I have a really hard time getting into like, WoW. Like I played it back when it was new, but I never rated or anything because it requires like kind of an amount of dedication and personality type that I just didn't have. Like I don't get addicted to games at all because I just for some reason get bored, which is a saving grace where my ADD kicks in and is like, nah, you're done with this. But like, that's a personality trait, not necessarily like the game's fault, right? Like that's a predilection expressing itself through a medium, not like the medium's fault. Like not everyone who drinks alcohol has an alcohol problem, right? Like, but that's a real problem to be had. Same thing with games. It's not like it's not a thing that you can become like reliant on games to like live your day-to-day life, but it's funny to see them come out now and be like, hey, hold on, all right, it's cool now,
right?
This all comes back to I was talking to my dad, who I like a lot of dads of dudes who probably work in the games industry and people who work in the games industry, don't quite understand my job. And I was explaining to him just how much money there is in the games industry. Like, you know, we surpassed film and music combined in like total sales around the world. Like the games industry is one of the largest like generators of money, right? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, like a game is probably your best dollar to hour value for entertainment that you can get. Like, was it like Final Fantasy IX is like $7 right now on Switch? Like, what, you got to spare 80 hours? Like, you can.
It's more of an investment in your time than it is in your wallet in this case. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, you know, with phones getting more powerful, like, you're seeing the democratization of video games go even further, right? Where you can go get Stardew Valley on like a phone now.
And, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's to talk about. You don't even have to buy a console anymore, right? Like, you're. And indie games, not to toot our own horn, but we're usually pretty accessible as far as like hardware needed to play, right? So even your like laptop that you just use for your now at home Zoom calls for work can probably run most indie games. It's pretty easy to get in the door there. So it's cool to finally see this. I would love to see if this helps indies a lot. Obviously, I'm biased. I like when indie games do well because
of course.
When you're buying an indie game, you're like helping somebody pay rent directly.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, gaming is kind of like everywhere now anyway. I mean, like I was just setting up a Fire Stick TV actually and realized that there was a whole gaming like tab basically to it. And there was like Pac-Man was a 256 or whatever it's called, I believe, like the one where you had to like outrun the glitch basically. Yeah. And there's like a bunch of other games on there by like Sega and like things like that. So yeah, gaming is everywhere, and like it's good that everyone can have access to games anyway, like during like these you know, these like weird times anyway that we're living in. So
how satisfied do you think the people behind the Xbox Games Pass and the PlayStation Now subscription idea are right now?
Oh man.
Like how many I told you so do you think they're throwing around the office?
No, that's true. Yeah, Xbox was definitely onto something there, and they're definitely poised anyway for like next generation anyway to really expand on that, which I definitely think they will, but we'll leave that for a story for another time anyway. But definitely some more games that we are going to see in the near future are Mario games. So Nintendo looks like they're going to be celebrating the 35th anniversary of the Mario franchise with some remasters here. So there have been some sources indicating that there's going to be a Mario Galaxy remaster for Switch along with Mario Sunshine and Mario 64, which I'm personally very excited for the third one anyway. And there's also like some talks also about a new Paper Mario game coming out too, which was very exciting for fans of that. So Hunter, I was kind of curious on your take with which Mario game you would most want to see a remaster for.
I mean, out of those, I'm probably on your side of Mario 64 is the one I played the most because I missed Galaxy, like that generation. I just kind of at that Same point here. Was, yeah, PC gaming a lot, you know, and until the Switch came out, they had kind of lost me after the like GameCube, like, you know,
I was the exact same way, actually. Yeah, I kind of moved away after the N64. I was just like, this is all baby's toys now. And this is kind of moving on to like Xbox and PlayStation, whatever.
I had a GameCube. I loved my GameCube. I played a lot of Smash with my friends and stuff. But I definitely, when the Wii came out, like a couple of friends had them and they're a really cool system, but it really felt more like a party game system. Like, I never had that experience of playing like Skyward Sword or anything.
It might be like just like the aesthetic of the console itself looking like a lunchbox. I think that turned me off a little bit from it.
Yeah, and the default controller being basically a remote, you know, is tough. It's a tough sell to
that
be
too.
Like, yeah.
When grandmas think that video games are cool, that's when you move away from
it. I think, you know, I'm as you know, as someone who would consider himself like a hardcore, unrepentant retro gamer and stuff, I actually am pretty stoked at anything that will get anybody on board for gaming. But
oh, same
I
here. Yeah.
Totally agree with like, huh, this kind of feels like a toy. And like to really play any of those games at a higher level, you do have to plug in a GameCube controller. Because
it's just that juvenile way of thinking that I'll admit that I had back then for sure. So.
Oh, right. For sure. Yeah. But so out of all those, the N64 one will be cool because, you know, trying to like I own that game and an N64, but like I had to put my CRT in storage finally because a 33-inch Trinitron is a giant beast and my girlfriend was getting real sad about it. Yeah, I still have it. No, I'll never get rid of it.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't storage. Either. Yeah.
No, definitely not. But
I think probably weighs 500 pounds.
I know. It's a workout plan, is lifting that thing up.
It is 150 pounds.
I'll have you know.
It's not a joke. I do want to play all the remasters to some degree. The one I'm interested in, though, is if they put Sunshine on there, one of the things I was just thinking about is the GameCube controllers had analog triggers. Like when you use them, they would have that like full feedback trigger and then a click at the very end. I wonder how they're going to do that, because that's how you varied the power of your washer when you
they're going to have to change around the controls for all those games, I feel like, especially like the ones that made use of the, like, you know, the way that the controllers were back then or whatever gimmicks that they were touting at the time.
I guess I shouldn't be. It's Nintendo, right? Like, if anything, they're usually pretty good at that. So they're not good at online. They're good at controls.
That's like, for sure. That's for sure. Jeremy, how about you?
My love affair with Nintendo kind of took a hit to the knee when I was a kid, because when the
arrow to the knee for Nintendo,
my father decided to be the rebel of my family for some reason after the NES came out and brought a Genesis home.
Oh wow, okay,
yeah. So I mean, I kind of did the Genesis thing, and then when I was just out of college, I actually picked up an N64, and then Castlevania 3D. And that was the end of me enjoying Nintendo games.
Yeah. Just bad timing overall.
Oh, Castlevania 3D was so awful, it ruined a console for me.
It's so funny. I was just listening to, I can't remember who was talking about it, but they were saying that it's funny to look back when people were touting, you know, polygonal 3D graphics as like the next wave, and being like, well, look at what Castlevania 3D is going to look like on the 64 versus like, look at this Symphony of the Night pixel graphics. And right. They were like, wow, how bad did that age? Like, that idea.
Symphony of the Night is amazing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen, you know, the impact that Nintendo or that Mario and these Mario games have had on like my younger cousins and friends that still, you know, love Nintendo to this day. I would love to see a remaster of Mario World, because that was like really the last Super Mario Brothers I really sat down and played.
So more like a remake, I'm thinking, is what you're thinking of, right?
Yeah. If they're releasing, you know, the titles that have all come out over the past 35 years, which, I mean, just stop on a second, that fact that Mario's 35 years old.
Yeah, he's catching up to us.
Nintendo's entire longevity after their being a playing card company was based on a short, fat Italian plumber.
Right, exactly. I know for me, anyway, like I would love to see Super Mario RPG come back in some way. Like, I know they have like the Paper Mario games and all that, and that's meant to be like the spiritual successor after Mario RPG, but I would love to see Nintendo and Square Enix like actually working together again to make a proper Mario RPG 2. I think that's kind of like long overdue and something I feel like a lot of people will get super hyped for, especially all those Geno fans out there.
It would be really funny if they went with like a FF7 remake, though, where it's like behind the shoulder real time action graphics.
Yeah.
And just be like, wait, hold on.
And each level's a chapter.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. See, you joke and say that, but how many people would legit like just shit their pants like over that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't like place my bets on that actually happening.
No.
But you know, it is a nice thought anyway. But yeah, like a new Paper Mario and you know, some like Mario remasters, I'm definitely all for, especially for Mario Galaxy, since, you know, again, I miss that whole like era of like Mario games basically, and like Nintendo games in general. So it would be nice to actually get like another chance to play like, the Galaxy games for sure. So
not to mention everything is fun on Switch, right? Like, what a great, like, it's a very fun console to play on. Like, whether you like using it on like screen or you like handheld, like, it's just the games I've enjoyed on other consoles are like sometimes even way more fun on Switch. It's crazy.
What did it for me was, I mean, I got Diablo 3 on the Switch because Diablo 3. and, you know, I was like flying out to PAX and I wanted something to play, you know, on my way out to Seattle. But after I, you know, of course, after I got Ultimate Alliance, like the first thing I did was pick up Final Fantasy VII and then Torchlight 2. And I love Torchlight. It's such a great game. Torchlight's awesome.
We played that the whole way to PAX East. My girlfriend and I were flying and we both have Switch Lights and we both have the 8-bit do like Bluetooth SNES controllers.
Yeah.
So the plane we were on had like a holder for a tablet. So we both had our Switches on that tablet holder, local networked to each other, playing together with our controllers, wearing like noise canceling headphones, and I was like, we must look just like the worst. But so much fun.
Oh, these millennials.
Right. Yeah. We're peak millennial.
Torchlight, yeah. The original Torchlight's the first game on Xbox that I ever got all the achievements on.
Oh, nice. Wow.
And yeah, but that was the moment that sealed it for me, is like laying in bed and just being able to play Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I just bought it. I'm excited.
I haven't played the Zelda game on it yet, so I don't think I'm going to now. Because
really?
No, I have to get it back.
Oh, I see. You don't believe. Well, you could always do what I did, which is I also got a Switch Lite because I'm smart with my money. But it's wild. A Switch Lite is $200. Like, if you played a Switch, you know how crazy of a good deal that is, even without video out, right? Like, for $200, you can have a machine that runs, like, so many really, really good experiences. It's crazy.
The problem is, though, is on the 10th of April, my time is going to be in wholly consumed.
Yeah.
So. Sure, for sure. As sarcastic as I am about the one chapter, I am definitely buying Final Fantasy VII's remake.
Oh, yeah. It's coming very soon, so stay tuned for that one. So the last news story I want to touch upon here also is that the Intellivision Amico lineup has been revealed, at least all but one anyway. So there are going to be 6 pack-in games here. So one is for skiing. So that's like the skiing game they played on your old computers, like with like the Yeti that would come and eat you every so often. Shark, which is a reimagining of the old Intellivision game. Astro Smash, also another remake. Then there's Cornhole, which is literally like what it is. It's just a cornhole, it's Cornhole, but on your Amico. And then there's Farkle, which is basically like a shaking dice game, yep. Like for like the family, basically up to 8 players can play. So like a nice like family game, basically. And then there's a mystery 6th game, which they haven't revealed yet, but they are planning to reveal in the coming months, they say. So I wanted to throw it out there on the table. What is this mystery 6th game going to be? And I'm just going to throw it out there. I believe it's going to be the new Earthworm Jim, because there is going to be a new Earthworm Jim game coming out for the Amico, and it's going to be an exclusive. And what better way to sell consoles than with a than with like a franchise that a lot of people would know about?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I was trying to think of other famous like games that are like native to the Intellivision as opposed to just like ports too. So yours mm-hmm. is probably a good. That makes sense. I saw that they had that on the listing. They had like Earthworm Jim, and I was like, huh, all right. Because when you look at all the games they listed in their trailer, they're all simple.
Yeah, that's kind of like what they're going for, really, like with this console being like simple, everyone can play, simple controls, all that stuff. So
I did look at, when I was watching it, when you linked it, I was a little surprised at what their price point is, I guess, for the console. It mm-hmm. seems like a little high. I wonder why, I guess, it's there. Is it you think it's just like economy of scale, like they're not going to make that many off the bat?
Or... I think it's part of that, yeah. And also partly because they're, because of these like 6 pack-in games, I think they're kind of justifying the price a little bit with that, which I could certainly see. I mean, like you get like 6 games automatically right off the bat with the console in this case. So
yeah, well, it's interesting. It might be something that like bears out over time once they launch. But yeah, like because just I guess I would... Since they're trying to get into the like the multiplayer, family-friendly, easy-to-pick-up game system, that means you're going head-to-head with Switch, right?
A little bit, yeah. Although, like, with the Switch, I mean, because, like, we had Tommy Tallarico on the show before kind of talking about this, too. Okay. But he's not really a fan of how Nintendo has kind of moved away from that, because, like, they kind of accidentally stumbled upon being more, like, family-friendly and everyone can play with the Wii. Like, that wasn't, like, really their intention with that console, but that's just what that console ended up being, more or less. And then they start kind of moving away from it, like, you know, especially when they confuse everyone with the Wii U launch. And then the Switch is still like easy enough for people to play, but still very much of a gamer's console in a lot of cases, with like some party games here and there, but not really like a focus on that at all, to be honest. So like the Amico is definitely like kind of tapping in, I feel like, more that, I guess, like family friendly or, you know, like where your grandma can play kind of like console, I guess.
I do see they have low price points on the games too, which that's cool. Like
there's that. Yeah. So I'm definitely very curious to see like what they're going to do with it anyway. Like once that comes out,
I'll have to go back and listen to that episode. Cause I'm curious now, like I hadn't really heard a whole lot about the Amico and mm-hmm. Now that like I'm like checking it out and hearing what you were saying, I'm curious. Yeah. Like what the impetus of like, you know, what motivated like him to want to basically make it, because it's an interesting idea. It's unique. Mm-hmm. It's risky. So, and like obviously, again, hey, any space where someone gets to make indies, I'm on board for, right?
Like, yeah, you'll definitely see more indie games on this, and just like, I don't know, just like more games, I guess, like where again everyone can play, and you'll see some like a television classics come back in a new way as well, like, you know, 8 player versions of games you otherwise wouldn't like have seen 8 player versions of, because that wasn't a thing back then, right. So definitely like a lot of cool ideas, and I don't know, I kind of get like a little bit of a Pac-Man Championship Edition vibes like with some of these, you know, which which is really cool. So I'm definitely all on board with that. I was kind of curious in your thoughts there, Jeremy.
I kind of agree with Hunter's point of view on the price point, especially taking into consideration the rumored cost of the PlayStation 5, which is going to be under $400.
Do we know that for sure, though?
I, you know, numerous outlets have been starting to kind of report that it's about $370.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, obviously, anytime you read the plethora of internet sites available, you got
to
take
it's on the internet. Salt. It has to be true, though.
Right. But I mean, if that's the case, and then this thing's price point is $250, that's a bold move, Cotton. We'll see how it plays out.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely very curious to see like how it plays out for sure, especially with that price point. But it all kind of depends really on the marketing of it and, like, I guess, like, how much value, I guess, that they're bringing with that price tag. So,
and then really too, you have to take in the, like, what you, a point that you made earlier when the WHO was talking about video game addiction, where you said it was more of a screen type thing versus a specific, you know, how are you going to dig your family's faces out of their phones or tablets to sit down and play, you know, Amico games?
By giving them a tiny little phone controller, right? The little controller they have is a phone. You can't hold both.
I mean, the controller itself honestly looks like an old school iPod, if you think about it, like with the rotating wheel and all that, you know?
That's what he's doing. He's making it so that you literally can't hold your phone while you play.
Yes. Exactly. You got to make a choice here, all right?
I mean, I think it'd be great for, like, you know, like, obviously, you know, parents and, like, little kids and stuff like that. But, like, how do you attract the attention of a teenager who just wants to play like Call of Duty or
Fortnite,
you know,
or whatever, yeah.
Right, or wants to convince his grandmother that MA means massively awesome. Yeah.
But that is what it means. That's what I've been told anyway, but...
I mean, honestly, like, I had heard this was coming out. This is, like, honestly, right before the show, this is the first time I really dug into what the plan was, and, I mean, it's something that I'd have to see in action.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and I mean, who knows? Maybe the $250 price tag is justified, and hopefully, it doesn't go the way of the Ouya.
Yeah,
Now I've got two Ouyas.
They serve as bookends.
Yeah,
they're just this week. Someone released the new game direct to Ouya, just in case you didn't know.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, there's some studio out there that's making Nintendo cartridges still.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. Mega Cat's still out there doing it.
Mega Cat, yeah. Retrotainment as well, too.
That's so. Right. Yeah, those guys are cool.
Welcome!
That's going to lead us now to the part of the show called What Are You Playing? What gets in the games you've all been playing or have recently beat. So, Jeremy, let's start with you. What have you been playing?
I am tossing my time between Doom Eternal, which I am not ashamed to admit I am playing on Please Don't Hurt Me.
That's easy.
You know, like... It's something about the engine that Bethesda has used in Wolfenstein and Doom.
Yeah,
it's way too smooth.
It's very
smooth. Way too smooth. Like, things
for better and worse, I guess. In a
right.
sense, yeah.
Like, I play Destiny 2 a lot on my PC, but I'm weird because I use a controller to do it. I'm just not used to a keyboard and mouse for a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to get used to playing on a PC, like, I jacked the sensitivity on the consoles now because it's pretty sensitive when you're playing with a PC and a controller. But, like, I signed in the Doom, like, I hit the, you know, like a millimeter, and I'm, like, looking right behind me, like, crap. But then I'm also playing the new Guns, Love, and Tentacle, I don't know. The new Borderlands expansion that just recently came out.
Oh, yeah,
that's
what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Guns, Love, and Tentacle.
I think that's what it's called, yeah.
Which I was pretty excited for when they announced it at PAX. I don't know if you... I think I told you guys about the people that got called on stage and yes. The dude proposed to his girlfriend.
Yeah, I heard about that. That was
really cool. Never heard a multiple crowd go, like, dead silent breath holding in my life. It's the weirdest thing in the world. And I'm just glad that the lady said yes, because I'm one of those people that laughs when things get real awkward. So, like, when you hear the entire crowd go, oh! And then she went, no. You would have heard, ah! but yeah, like, switching between the two is weird because the motion.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, it makes sense. I've always found Borderlands has its own kind of feel to it.
Yeah, like, I like playing Zane. Like, he's just, his one-liners are freaking hilarious. And then the racing game that came out on PlayStation Plus a while ago, something Horizons.
Horizons... Not Horizon Zero Dawn, but yeah, like, I know which one you mean, though, yeah. How about you there, Hunter?
Oh man, it's such a long list.
Yeah. I guess like the ones that they've been playing like the most lately, I guess.
I mean, I have definitely played a decent amount of Animal Crossing, but I again am insulated by my game ADHD, right, which allows me to like get bored real quick, which is I think somewhat good, right? Cuz like it's supposed to be a bite-sized game in theory, right? Or however you want to play it.
What kind of come in and out sort of experience, yeah.
Yeah, like pick it up, put it down, like I mean anyone who wants to play it a ton, that's awesome. I just start to bang my head against like doing it too much in a row. So like I've been playing that. I've been playing a lot of 2D retro platformers for work reasons, just because I constantly try and play them to stay up on or refresh myself with ones that I had forgotten. I just beat Doom on Game Boy Advance.
Oh, really? Okay. How does that play exactly?
Surprisingly well. That's why I was playing it. I was like, this couldn't possibly be good. It's pretty good. It's really impressive what they were able to do. That's like probably one of the most impressive ports I've ever played, because the Game Boy Advance should not be able to render those graphics.
Right, I know, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I haven't beaten Doom in quite a few years, and I just popped it in and was like, I just happened to have a copy to play, and because I was testing out I have like a new backlit Game Boy Advance that's like the original Game Boy Advance with a Game Boy SP screen inside of it.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm an aggressive retro gamer, like way too many.
I mean, so the GBA is kind of like amazing, honestly, with what it can do. Because I know there's actually like a Max Payne game on the GBA, which also plays very well too. Oh, surprisingly,
dang. I didn't know that. I gotta go look at it, because that's very much my jam. I like handheld era. Like you know, the Game Boy Advance is such a good. The part of the reason I was playing stuff is it's such an interesting period of time where like. You got, like, what was it, Metroid? Was it Fusion?
Yeah, I think so.
And Zero Mission.
Zero Mission, which, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got, like, a raft of Castlevania games. Mm-hmm. It was such a renaissance for, like, 2D platformers and, like, I guess Metroidvanias, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That is the proper term.
Yeah, right. But I just mostly that I've been playing. Like I said, Realm Royale it's interesting to play a game that is still active and has a fan base. Like you can still go play if you pop on and, you know, go to find a match. It takes like 20, 30 seconds to get into a match. So obviously there are still people playing it, but you can tell it's like on the downward slope, right? Where they're not probably updating it a whole lot or whatever. And you can see why, just because of what appeals to gamers, right? Like cosmetics and stuff. They didn't create a battle pass. There's no system like that. So like they just kind of got left behind, and you know, Hi-Rez does so many other, they got Smite, they have other games.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a shame because it has some pretty interesting mechanics that aren't in other battle royale games. Like one, it's basically a fantasy battle royale. Like it's Fortnite with no building, and instead you get like magic powers, which is pretty great. But if you get taken out, you get transformed into a chicken. And if you can stay alive for like 20 seconds, you get transformed back into yourself. And you can attack people while you're a chicken. That's such a cool mechanic where you're like not immediately out, which creates these hilarious things where you like take someone out and then you're chasing a chicken around like a rock as they're trying to run away, and you're just trying to get the last bit of their health. Hilarious.
So there's like a little bit of like a Fable sense of humor, I guess, to it as well. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's definitely pretty goofy. Because that was always one of my things I banged my head against with Fortnite. Like anybody who wants to say that Fortnite is a good game, in my opinion, isn't being honest, right? Because I think so much money and time and development experience goes into that game that it's like saying McDonald's doesn't make good hamburgers. Like no, they don't make healthy hamburgers, but like they scientifically figured out what makes something technically a hamburger.
Right. A like reasonable Fortnite's facsimile dead. Of a hamburger, yes.
Right. Good enough to make obscene amount of money. Like there you go, Fortnite. Like the right.
So Fortnite is the McDonald's hamburgers of video games, basically, is what you're saying.
Which, you know, I guess could be insulting, but I mean it as like it's homogenous in a good way, I guess. Right.
That's
in a
fair.
Way where they found whatever, it's like the battle royale, but I hate building. It's not fun to build on a console, especially. And so it's interesting to see that this one didn't make it, because it plays very similar to what Fortnite would be with no building.
Very cool. As for me, I did recently beat Life is Strange 2. So I was playing through like the Life is Strange games. Like I beat Life is Strange 1 like some time ago, but I played Before the Storm, which I absolutely loved, and played through Life is Strange 2 just recently here. And I liked it a lot as well, though not nearly as much as the other two games. I think it might be like something with like maybe the writing of the characters a little bit. I also wasn't like a big fan of like how the ending was, and I know there's like multiple endings as well, but it seems like the ending that I got is technically the quote unquote best ending in a sense. And even then, I'm like, that's not really satisfying all that much. So, I liked it enough. I liked the journey up until that point, but it's just like the way it ended is just like didn't really like kind of scratch that itch, I guess, for me in a sense, but I still liked it enough anyway. And I'm playing through Final Fantasy VII on Switch right now, actually, in anticipation of the remake coming out very soon here. I actually just got to the point where I enlisted Cid, and I already have Yuffie and Vincent Valentine on my squad as well. So I basically have like full squad before that event happens, which I guess I won't spoil here for those of you who haven't played Final Fantasy VII. Definitely enjoying it enough anyway. It's a game that hasn't aged particularly well, not only like in its visuals, but also with how it controls a little bit. Like, I don't really like controlling the characters like when they're on like the world map or like in houses and things like that. Like, it just kind of
is a little rough.
Yeah. And even like with the dialogue also isn't all that we'll say PC these days. not like in terms of like swears or anything, but like more of like people just calling each other like retards and things like that, like off the drop of a hat. It's like, that doesn't really quite sit well in 2020 sensibilities. This is a little odd in that sense, but definitely enjoying it enough. Certainly like the combat system, I love the characters and the story and all that stuff, so I'm kind of like pushing through with that. And again, before remake drops. Aside from that, also I'm playing through Doom 64. So Doom 64 was like the game basically that came with pre-orders, I believe, for Doom Eternal. So I got it like that way, basically. So so I'm definitely enjoying it because I actually never played through Doom 64 before.
I bought it on Switch though, so I'm playing it too right now.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. It's very much like classic Doom, basically, but with like Nintendo 64 like graphics, I guess, in a sense. But it's basically more classic style Doom, so I'm definitely all aboard with that and enjoying that a lot as well. And also, besides that, I've been playing like a bit of Bubble Bobble for Friends, which I believe just dropped the day before we're recording this here. This is basically more Bubble Bobble. If you are a big Bubble Bobble fan in the past, then you'll definitely enjoy this. It's just basically very much that, but in a cleaner package, a more aesthetically pleasing package, if you will. There's like some like four player options to it, hence like why it's called Bubble Bobble for Friends. There's also like certain upgrades that you can get and like have your character bub basically like wear in order to like blow bubbles further, or like be able to link bubbles together in order to basically zap enemies across, things like that. So it's a lot of fun. It's definitely something I believe that if you are a fan of Bubble Bobble or just like a fan of like classic arcade games basically in any sort of sense, this definitely kind of scratches that itch, I feel like, in the, for you. So definitely check that one out. And a game here also that you should definitely check out is Coffee Talk. So this is a game that I played before. If you're a fan of Valhalla at all, this is definitely one that you want to check out. I have a game code here for it for Steam. Coffee Talk is a game about listening to people's problems and helping them by serving up a warm drink out of the ingredients you have in stock. It is a game that depicts lives as humanly as possible while having a cast that is more than just humans. Immerse yourself in the stories of alternative Seattle inhabitants, ranging from a dramatic love story between an elf and a succubus, and an alien trying to understand humans' lives, and many other characters whom players will find strangely echo the world around them. So if that sounds like a jam, definitely jump on this. Again, this is a Steam code. The code is 4AX7VLB0L59J0JN. Again, that's Coffee Talk on Steam. Enjoy. And if you do redeem that, definitely let us know at ARG Podcast on Twitter.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
And with that, we have the Stage of History, which is a celebration of retro titles that deserve a spot, for better or for worse, in the pantheons of history. So I figure since we are talking about Infernax, we'll talk about one of the games that is definitely heavily inspired by here, which is Zelda II: The Adventure of Link. So this is a 1988 action RPG by Nintendo. It was the only technical sequel to the original Legend of Zelda until the 2017 release of Breath of the Wild. It introduced a magic meter and the Dark Link character, which would be reused in the series. and WayForward title Adventure Time, Hey Ice King, Why'd You Steal Our Garbage? Pays homage to Zelda 2 through its gameplay and references. So definitely some fun little facts there on Zelda 2. But Hunter, I'll have you start off here. How much do you love Zelda 2 in terms of like you growing up with it, but also in terms of how much it's affected like the development of Infernax?
So what's funny is that because of the timing of it, like I've worked at Berserk for about 2 years now, about a year and a half now, but I've been their friend and helped them run the booth for Just Shapes and Beats and all that for much longer than that. Mm-hmm. And they had started working on Infernax a while ago, which we'll get into, but I came into working with them already loving Zelda 2 for totally different reasons, which is that when I was a kid, my first console was an NES, and I didn't have Zelda 1. I only had Zelda 2.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
So I played Zelda 2 a lot, and it was really, really hard, but I didn't come in with like a preconceived notion of what makes a Zelda game. So to me, that was like, this is a Zelda game. This is what a Zelda game is. And I like platformers. And so it just kind of ranked among like other 2D platformers I liked, but it had a lot of stuff in it that was, I guess maybe unique, honestly, at that time. Like the concept of, like, a lot of people don't enjoy its combat because it is not what you would expect out of a 2D side-scrolling Nintendo game, because generally speaking, it's tough. Maybe you guys can do it. Like, name another 2D side-scrolling platformer that has combat that asks you to slow down and fight slowly, because that's the key to not dying immediately in Zelda 2, is like learning enemy attack patterns and like fighting very slowly, which is like something really common in like a shmup or whatever, but in a 2D platformer or in a Zelda game, right? Like, not really. Like, you just go in usually sword swinging, and if you do that in Zelda 2, you'll die. You will 100% die. And a lot of that is game design stuff, but some of it is on purpose, right? Like, some of it is they wanted the game to have like a slower, more methodical method of play that you find now, you know, a lot of people like to like retroactively assign the idea of like a Souls-like to it, right? Because that's how people be. But it is real, like in that, like in certain enemies, you could only fight them by doing like a jump slash attack, and the reason is because that is your fastest attack in the game. There's actually like frame differences in the attack speeds and stuff, mm-hmm. which you didn't really see until like fighting games and other things like that. So like, I like Zelda 2 a lot.
I mean,
I could just keep going forever, like, because there's so many interesting things about it. And I think part of it, I almost love it more knowing that people don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of funny though, like, you know, when you like ask, like, as far as like what other games are like this, like where it had that very slow, deliberate, and like almost like more strategic side of like, I don't know, action side scrolling, but also like RPG elements to it. Faxanadu certainly comes to mind, you know, as being like another kind of like deliberately slow type of game that's like that. But that game, as well as like games like it, were certainly heavily influenced, I feel like, by Zelda 2. And as much as Zelda 2 is kind of like, I don't know, seen as like a redheaded stepchild, a little bit of the Legend of Zelda franchise,
right?
You know, it definitely has its hardcore fans and like people who just like really enjoy like that style of play. It would just be very interesting to see Nintendo, I guess, like revisit that in some way. I don't really expect them to, honestly, and I'm definitely more of a top-down Zelda fan myself.
Sure,
But I do appreciate what Zelda 2 did anyway.
That's sort of the default mode, right? What's funny is that, I just pulled it up because I was curious, the relative release dates. I think that they're so close that they might actually have been in concurrent development, Faxanadu and Zelda 2.
Oh, really?
Like,
okay.
Yeah, because the release date for Faxanadu is November 16th, 87, and Zelda 2 is January 87. So that's pretty close for that period of time. I wonder, you know, it's just cool to see, like, was it like simultaneous inspiration or whatever? Like two separate teams having similar ideas to some degree. I'm sure there must have been overlap to some degree, but it's just cute. Like, I love both of those games.
How about you there, Jeremy?
I didn't go down the Zelda path as a kid.
There is no Zelda in your house. Yeah.
No, I mean, so my friend had Zelda, and I watched him play that. But one of the first games my dad got me with the Nintendo was Castlevania.
Right.
So I totally went down the, like, Konami, Contra, Castlevania, and then, you know, the Double Dragon.
And Blades of Steel.
I would only play Blades of Steel to get the video game during the intermission.
Yeah, yeah. Galaga game in there. Yeah.
That was the only reason, like, I want to play the hard Galaga.
Right, yeah. That's the true Galaga right there.
But, you know, like, I have appreciated what Nintendo has done with the Zelda franchise. And I do remember Link 2 being a complete departure from, like, Zelda. And I think that was the other reason I never really got into it, is because I played the original Zelda a little bit, but not really deeply into it. Because, like I said, I'd watch a buddy play it. And it's kind of one of those things of, like, you know, if you watch somebody beat a game, you're just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, yeah.
But I knew that he was heated about Link 2. Like, he was not happy about it.
And, well, that final dungeon, I know, can be, like, just really aggravating to get through.
So. There's definitely points along the way. There's pain points the whole game through. I'm not so much of an apologist to try and pretend like that's not the case.
So, like, I keep, like, going on Nintendo Online on the Switch, and I keep, like, kind of looking at the original Zelda, and I think Link 2's on there too, and it's like,
yep.
do I really want to do this?
Like, going back, I, as someone who likes it, I always tell people, just have a guide with you, because they're, like, a lot of those pain points are, like, weird decisions that were made, and the, like, things that there's no lamp shading that you would need to do to find them.
It's a little cryptic, yeah.
Yeah, there's things where you're like, wow, there's almost no way that I would have just found that out. Like, there's almost, like, through play, no way that you would find that out.
I ended up doing that with Ocarina of Time, because I remember I beat that one, and I was like, wait a minute. I beat this way too quickly.
Yeah, for sure. But Zelda 2, I know, it can definitely be very cryptic. I tried playing it through, I think, once before, and I only got to, like, a certain point, I think, because I wasn't using a guide or anything. I was just, like, just trying to, like, figure out the game. And, you know, it was just so cryptic, especially, like, when you're, like, talking to, like, the townspeople and all that stuff, and, like, they're not really giving you the greatest of hints, you know, as far as, like, what it is you should be doing next.
They ranked slightly above Simon's Quest in their usefulness, but
actually, that wouldn't be a bad poll of some sort, like, as far as, like who are the least useful NPCs in video games, you know?
Hey, they always told you when that curse was coming.
That's true. Yeah, that is a fair point. That is a fair point. Much better than I Am Error, anyway. So,
hey, everyone. This is Rob and Jay from the Classic Gaming Podcast. We play and talk about old school video games on our podcast. I know you probably couldn't have guessed that from the name of it. But as for me, I tend to prefer the good old point-and-click adventure game genre. I also like strategy games. I play a lot of a wide variety of stuff. As for Jay?
Yeah, I'm really partial to RPGs and RTSs, so things like Final Fantasy Tactics and Chrono Trigger to that of StarCraft or Age of Empires. Generally with the podcast, we try to stay on topic, but we usually end up going off on super, super far tangents.
Give us a listen over at the HP Video Game Podcast Network. You can also find us at classicgamingpodcast.com, and we hope you check us out.
That leads now to our main topic, which is all about Infernax. So this is your time to shine here, Hunter. So why don't you tell us, like, a bit about, like the roots of Infernax, or at least, like, what you first learned about the game when you came on board with Berserk?
Oh, yeah, sure. No, we've talked about it a ton, so I know enough.
It's by heart now.
So back in the day, if people aren't familiar with, Berserk Studio is, I'd say, now known for, we made the game just Shapes and Beats, which is the rhythm kind of bullet hell game on most platforms. But traditionally, like, over the last, like, the studio is over 10 years old now, we made flash games. We were a flash game studio for, like, Newgrounds and Kongregate and all those places, as well as making some mobile games later on down the road. So the company is founded by our three founders, Mark, Etienne, and Simon. And they're still the three founders, right? But it's two artists and a coder. And the Infernax started as kind of like a fun side project for Etienne and Simon originally, where they were, like, trying to do something just quick and fun that they wanted to make so that they could see if there was any interest for it. And do you guys remember flash games licensing?
Not really. No, I mean, like, I see, like, Flash games, like, all the time, like, on Newgrounds, as you said.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the licensing behind them, though.
Yeah, yeah. The way that there was an interesting way that it would work where back in the day, you could make a game, and then you'd go on this website, Flash Games Licensing, and you would say, hey, I've got this game or this, you know, concept of a game or whatever, and I'm looking for someone to buy it, essentially. And if you do that, we'll put your logo in the game, and we'll, you know, say you sponsored it or whatever. So you could sell your game kind of like on a marketplace.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's how a lot of those Flash games back in the day got funded, is they'd get, you know, a couple $1,000s from some sort of company who wanted their ads in the game or whatever. And so Infernax originally was supposed to be like not a game jam, but somewhere between a game jam and like an actual game, where it was like, you know, a quick to make concept. And so they actually made it really quickly originally with like a pretty reduced scope. Right. It was meant to be an homage to like an NES style ARPG in the vein of like Zelda 2 and like Castlevania 2 specifically. And also I've actually talked to Etienne a bit since last you and I talked, and Fexanadu is in there too. He was just like, I usually don't bring it up though, because most people aren't as familiar with it.
Right. Yeah. Fexanadu, like, who?
Yeah. Right. But so when they did that, like one of the things they ran into is so to like explain what Infernax is, right? It is a side scrolling 2D action RPG platformer of the NES era vintage, with somewhat, you know, hybrid upgraded graphics a little bit. Like the actual gameplay is very NES-y. There's no, like, it doesn't look like it would be an SNES game.
Right. No, it's definitely an NES game, like to like its core, as far as like how it plays, for sure.
Right. Yeah. And that's 100% intentional. Some of the pixel art that we have in it is like higher res, but that's really just more because the part of the game, right, is its gameplay is very reminiscent of those two games. And we tried to like remove a lot of the cruft, right? Like the Castlevania jump is gone, because that was never fun.
Where you drop like a rock, like as soon as you're like hitting like the downward turn. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're committed to every jump you take, where you, right. Like, yeah. The weird Lara Croft jump, where you like jump and you, or like the Prince of Persia jump,
right,
where you're, yeah, like, yeah. So that stuff's gone, like, because it's just not, it doesn't really serve the whole, but it's also really gory. Like, yeah, really, really pixel gory, which of course is not very gory because they're pixels,
right?
But it is gory enough that when they went to put it on Flash Games Licensing, it was shocking. But nobody wanted to buy a 2D retro action RPG platformer that's like really metally and gory.
Right. I mean, if this did actually come out in the 80s, I mean, people would just be like all up in arms about it. Like, they'd be burning down your studio.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It would have been. We wouldn't even. There's no way. There's no way. But so after they did that and they didn't really get a lot of interest in doing any licensing, they thought, you know what? Like, this was when Kickstarter was just getting started. They were like, we can do a Kickstarter for like a really low goal, and we'll just see if people want to even help us basically finish this, right? Like, because they were stuck in this weird limbo where what they had designed was really meant to be a, like a Flash game experience, not a full like sit down and play it as a console game.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it a game that stood alone on its own outside of just being like a browser game would have taken more dev time that they didn't necessarily have like cash on hand to, you know, spend like a month, 2 months, 6 months, however long it was going to take them at that point.
So was the footage that was shown during the Kickstarter campaign, was that basically like everything that was like from the original, I guess, like, for lack of a better term, like the game jammy build of it?
Yeah, yeah, like the initial, the early build. Yeah, the early build that was the one that they were like thinking would originally be something akin to like an online Flash game experience. That's all that footage. And the game still has like a lot of that in it. You know, we've mm-hmm. gone through and upgraded the UI. We're upgrading all of the like animations and stuff, but not a crazy amount, right? Like a lot of the enemy animations and stuff are still the same. It's more of like polish, so where each element just works better now.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, they kickstarted it, and it did get successfully kickstarted. But what had happened is they had set their goal really low because they weren't like really trying to make like a huge profit or anything. They had like really humble goals, but then didn't think about the fact that what they ended up getting when they were successfully funded wasn't really going to be enough to bridge the gap to like make it a full game.
That's so always the case with Kickstarter, I find. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so, but like, I think it's pretty cool. Like when I, you know, when they brought me up to speed on how we did it, because all of this has happened before I started, but like I was aware of it, is that they realized that the game that they would be able to make with what they had in hand, and then with the dev time they could add for what the Kickstarter had gotten, wasn't going to be like a good game for those people who gave them their money. And so I think we may be, and I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure we're like one of the only games that ever successfully kickstarted that manually went back and made everyone take their money back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, except we kept one penny from each backer.
How dare you?
Well, it's because there wasn't like an automatic system in place, because this is, again, like a long time ago. They had to go and like get a hold of each person and be like, here's your money back. It took forever. But by keeping one penny, those people still technically back us, so that when the game comes out, they're all getting the game for free.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So like whoever backed us back in the day is still technically a backer, even though they should have gotten their money back by now. So when the game launches, that game is free to them. Like, because it was like an appreciation of like, we are really glad that you guys believed in us. We didn't want to go forward with it at this scope though, because it wasn't going to be good. You know, it was going to be a compromise. Like, and so after that, like it's funny because development for Infernax has been off and on ever since then, because the Kickstarter was in like 2015.
Right.
And yeah, they had made it earlier than that. If you go and look for a trailer, it's the original Kickstarter trailer. It's hilarious because it's the founders of the company like wearing like horse masks and stuff in one of our basement.
I did see that. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. But
it's amazing. It's an amazing trailer.
Yeah, I wish we could update, like, because of the way it's shot, I can't just like, you know, slot in new graphics, because everything else about it is awesome. Like, I love how like lo-fi it is. The production's great. But so anyway, like, it got put on ice off and on because we have a game called Zumbidle, which is like an idle game that we had like supported for years and years. And the goal of that game was to help us self-fund development on Infernax initially. That was the plan, is that we were going to make a game that was going to develop and then be a source of money to help us self-fund so that we didn't need to like crowdfund or get a publisher. And while they were working on Zumbidle, Simon, one of the other co-founders, made Just Shapes and Beats.
Oh yeah, that's right. And like Just Shapes and Beats, I mean, like for like a lot of people who go to like PAX, basically, it was like the constant, basically. Like there's like kind of like the always like reliable as far as like, you know, Death, Taxes, and Just Shapes and Beats being on the PAX show floor. So
oh, yeah. we're very pink and very loud, so it's hard to figure out how.
There's that too. Yeah, you can't really ignore you guys. So.
And so that game was in development for like 4 years. Well, technically a little less than four, but that was because, like I said, we were a Flash game studio. So Infernax was originally written and designed in Flash, as was Just Shapes and Beats. And because of the fact that you can't really port that, that's not really a portable system, we had to build internal tools to allow us to port everything from Flash to Unity. So we built Just Shapes and Beats twice. Like, we built it to almost completion in Flash and then realized that we wouldn't be able to port it anywhere. So we built it again in Unity.
Jeez.
And
yeah,
that's kind of what happened with Infernax too. But it got shelved and put on ice while working at Just Shapes and Beats, because Just Shapes and Beats has been very successful. A lot of people enjoy it. It's, you know, it's pretty popular. We've done well. We were part of the Nindies program on Switch and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like because of that, Infernax got put on ice. And so when I started working at Berserk, one of the other coders, Shane, is one of the guys who worked on Zumbidle. He was the person who maintained it for years. When we met about 2 years ago up in Quebec, because we flew up to go do every year we have a company party, because like we're both really far remote. We convinced Etienne that we should take Infernax off ice. And it, my motivation, I mean, obviously everybody was on board. Everyone loves the game, but the game had been on ice. And I think everyone at the company was like, we always joke it's a cursed game about a curse, because every time we try and finish it, like something happens. Like, and so we all had some discussions. I think at the end, eventually he got a hold of us and said, like, I want to try it. Like, let's pull it out of ice and see if people are into it. So they polished it up and finished the demo, which is the one that you played at East. Did you play that at West or just
I played
East?
At East personally.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the same general demo as the one that we had. Our first showing of Infernax was West of this year. Mm-hmm. Or I guess last year. Man, time is weird.
Yeah.
But we showed our first, you know, public showing of that, like kind of sliced demo, which represents like the first castle of the game. Because it does keep that structure from like Castlevania, where like there are castles.
Mm-hmm.
And so it went really well, and it was exciting because we got really good feedback. A lot of people enjoyed it. Like, and so we've been working on it since then. And that kind of brings us to now, where we're, you know, in basically the polish phase. Like, we like to give really conservative time estimates because of how crazy the development on it has been. But like, we're hoping, you know, without, I was going to say without any major catastrophes, we were shooting for the end of 2020. So I don't know if that's changed at all with everything that's going on, but I mean, we're all still, Berserk's already a remote studio. So day-to-day operations haven't changed all that much.
Yeah. Plus it's going to be like a digital download too. So I mean, people can still access it pretty easily that way. So
Right. Of course. Yeah. I think for us, it's more polished. Like one of the big things that people say about Just Shapes and Beats a lot is that you can really tell like a lot of effort and polish went into the design of the game. Like it's a simple game, you know, but each touch point has a lot of thought and care. And a lot of that's a very signature thing of Simon, one of the co-founders. He's a really talented coder. Mm-hmm. And so like as a whole, we all are super into feel and polish and stuff. I think we talked about that at East, right? Because everyone all week was like, hey, when's it coming out? And I was like, well, shooting for the end of the year, the only reason it would go longer is not like we're not laying tracks down in front of a moving train. We're trying to make our smooth ride now. Like we could like theoretically a company who cared about polish less might be like done in a couple months because like the game is playable internally.
Right.
But it needs to feel good beginning to end, because part of what's tough to a line we're trying to walk real hard with it is we want it to be really like rewarding to play in that, like, wow, it's difficult and beating it is like a challenge. But like, I don't think any of us think that Nintendo hard was good, right?
No,
like we can leave Nintendo hard behind. We can make it hard, but fair.
But I mean, like that polish though, you know, can make like the difference between like an okay game and like a really great game as far as like how it actually feels. I mean, like especially if you think of like the Shovel Knight games, for example. I mean,
oh, of course, yeah.
You know, there's so much polish in that game, and it shows like as you're playing it. You know,
another good one is for another studio from Quebec City is Sabotage, the guys that are friends of ours, and they made Messenger. Messenger is a beautiful game. The polish and control on that is great. Like,
and they're coming out with their own, I think, like 16-bit style like RPG game now. It seems. And that looks amazing already.
Uh-huh. Their Kickstarter was funded in like something crazy, like a day. I mean, of course, their work is wonderful. I'm super stoked because I didn't play. Was it Chrono Trigger?
Yeah, Chrono Trigger. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. I tried. I bounced off it a bunch, and so like I'm interested. I know. My girlfriend is always telling. I want to. But
your girlfriend is right. I'm on your girlfriend's side.
She is right. I know. But there's only so much time in life for JRPGs. But
the time is now. The like, time was yesterday.
I feel like David to Chrono Trigger is like me to Skyrim.
Okay. Yeah, very much. Chrono Trigger is my favorite game of all time, so that's why I'm always like encouraging people to play it if they haven't yet. So
the point being is like, you know, that you're right. The polish is everything in this case. Like the game is playable. That doesn't mean it's done, right? So that's why we've been taking our time, is because it's also like trying to lean on that sort of that design ethos of not trying to like launch and then patch, right? Because like that's part of what made Nintendo games. There was no patching.
Yeah, exactly.
You had to just do it right or live with it forever.
Pretty much. Yeah. So we mentioned, you know, before about like its retro gaming inspirations, like a bit like with with Castlevania, Zelda 2, Faxanadu as well. Can you like, I guess, like break down like the different influences as far as retro games that came before it, and like which parts influence parts of Infernax?
Yeah. So one of the big things in the game is there's like a unique death animation for every enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's like a direct homage to like Zelda 2, right? Because when you die, it's got that really unsettling black on red screen. And so that's...
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and ours has that same, like, if you know, any enemy or trap or whatever, when you die, there's like a custom coded animation for each enemy doing that in like a black silhouette over red, which ties into the whole like gory over the top goofiness of the game.
Well, especially when you get to that point in the game, like with like the villager that shows up, and you choose to either slay him or pray him.
don't be a good guy.
Yeah,
no, just.
Kill everyone you see, basically.
Just hit him. Just don't. See,
what's funny about that, though, is so, like, for people who haven't played the demo, it's pretty early on, too. There's an encounter where you talk to a guy who asks you to kill him, right? And then, a QuickTime event pops up, which, like, we're calling it the fate system, which is where you, like, choose things. That the interesting thing that doesn't come across in the demo with that is that there's actually consequences to the decision you make there.
Hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's like a momentary, like, yeah, you do this and there's an effect, but there's later effects too. Like there's a morality system built in that keeps track of those choices you make.
Oh, great.
So, so in the case of that interaction, like choosing to pray for the guy, you can pray him or slay him. If you slay, he just immediately, he says thanks and he immediately dies, right? Basically, which is hilarious. And I love it. It's like one of my favorite lines in the whole game. If you pray for him, he turns into like a boss fight. And that's the right choice, quote unquote, right? Like that's the because you play like a paladin-esque crusader guy,
right?
And so you would probably do that. But anyway, the point is like the morality system tracks like what you do as you go through the game. And Shane added in a thing where in the demo, like you, so you said you slayed. Is that what you did, or did you do both?
I chose to pray myself. So yeah.
Okay. If you did that when you got to the town later on and you had the ability to talk to a wizard and buy a spell, the spell that was offered to you depended on what you chose in that.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Wow.
So if you prayed, that meant you had heal. And if you slayed, that meant you got the lightning spell.
Okay.
Now, that's not how we're going to get into the game, but we wanted something small to represent like
to indicate, you know, that. Yeah.
Right. And so like in the game, it's more subtle and more of like an end game sort of thing, right? Because there are multiple endings in the game.
Mm.
But like the other mechanics that I guess it's probably easier to just like point out which ones. So in Zelda 2, the other stuff we have that are like kind of inspired is there's a shield that actively blocks projectiles at two heights, which is like one of the core mechanics of Zelda 2, is you've got that shield. From Zelda 2, the magic system is really reminiscent of it, where you have spells that you unlock as you play through the game, that you have a mana bar, and then also just the leveling system itself, right? Like through the game there are save shrines that you go to, and those are when you go to use them, that, you know, you pray and heal, but also you can upgrade your abilities, so you've got an attack power, a defense power, and a magic, like the same that split you would find in Zelda 2, that you spend your XP on to level those up, so that you get increased, you know, HP, you get increased mana capacity, and you get decreased damage from attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all Zelda 2. A lot of the combat stuff is Zelda 2. A lot of the parts where Castlevania 2 specifically, but Castlevania comes in, is kind of the overworld map, because the game doesn't go to a top-down Zelda 2 style like world map. It's more of a Castlevania 2 style, you know, open world with the gating of like their abilities you have to get to be able to progress past certain paths.
Metroidvania-ish in a way, yeah.
I always like to say Zeldavania.
Zeldavania, okay. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you go with that, yeah.
But, because we don't, like, you know, we don't have any what I would consider to be uniquely Metroid-inspired things. Any of the things that overlap are from Zeldavania games, basically. So yeah, the overworld travel is very reminiscent of like Castlevania 2. There's a day-night cycle, so that there are different enemies and they are like stronger and harder to fight at night. Things like that. That's definitely borrowed.
I mean, when I saw you guys at West, that was what caught my attention from the get-go. Is I was like, whoa, that looks exactly like Simon's Quest. And like that I was on that couch for like a half an hour.
That's ideal. That's what I want. I was really, it was a good show. We were all excited. I think that show going well was really great, because it helped. Like I always knew, I think, that people were going to respond to it, because there isn't really a game that's doing exactly it. You know, there's a lot of really good 2D platformers, but there isn't really one that's like paying homage to these two games. I guess, you know, three, if you want to include like Xanadu, but like, that paying homage to these two games, because they're both really divisive. They're so cool. They have so many great ideas, and they drop the ball in some very specific ways that really held them back from being appreciated like long term, right? Like they're like certain people appreciate what they did, but by and large, the public wasn't stoked on them, and so their legacy is like kind of tainted. So you don't see a lot of video games inspired by them.
So is Infernax like a little bit of an apology letter, I guess, to people who are disappointed by Zelda 2 and Castlevania 2?
I don't know. I always do. I do jokingly say, I was like, my shortest pitch for it is, imagine if Zelda 2 and Castlevania 2 were both good and made by Canadian metalheads. Like,
right.
It's very much like the aesthetic is Castlevania plus like goofy over the top, like not like intentionally funny. But when I say goofy, I mean it is just funny to see that much pixelated gore. Because
right.
It's like it's very pixelated. Top. Yeah.
It's like it's the equivalent of like an 80s horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Mortal Kombat or something like that. Yeah.
And so, yeah, had like five rib cages.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if I'd say it's an apology letter as much as like we're all in like actually like, you know, fans of those games. So it's almost more of like a love letter to the parts of those games that are good.
That's fair.
You know, yeah. Like because like you can't divorce the fact that they have problems. Like you said, there are like Simon's Quest has some really, really questionable decisions. Like Zelda 2 has some obtuse moments, but Simon's Quest has some outright like hateful choices.
Yeah.
NPCs tell you the wrong thing intentionally. And like, that's such a weird decision to make that early in the game. Like in a, like games hadn't gotten to the point where anyone would have expected that yet.
Right.
And so doing it is just mean. So we're leaving all that stuff behind, at least as much as to where it feels fun, right? Like you want the game to be fun, even if it's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like one thing I definitely took out of like, you know, my playthrough of it, like where it was definitely difficult. Like it was definitely kind of like harkening back to like NES hard, but not actually being NES hard to the point of being like unfair in a lot of ways, like Ninja Gaiden or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like more of like, it's a good challenge, and it's definitely challenging for people like who, you know, whether you grew up on those games or not. It's going to be a challenge for you, but you know that if you made like a mistake, if you died or whatever it may be, you know it was your fault. And that's always like the best type of challenging games when, you know, when you do die, because, you know, for hard games, I mean, you're just kind of destined to like die a lot anyway. Then you know exactly what you should have done instead of like what you did.
But it's kind of like that Dark Souls feeling where it's like if you died, it's because, like you said, Dave, you decided to take that extra swing instead of getting the hell out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what did me in when I first played the demo. And I think I looked at you, Hunter. I went, yeah, I did that.
Yep. I mean, it's funny because that happened to when I had a review from the dudes at Nintendo Enthusiasts came by at East 2 to play. And it was cool because he was playing it and he got all the way to the final boss in it and died like one hit away from beating the boss. And he sat there for like a full like 30 seconds and was like, all right, I know what I did. Like, do you mind if I play again? I was like, no, of course. Right. Like, that's exactly what I want to hear is somebody playing it for review who wants more time. You're like, please. And then he got all the way to the boss and died again on the last hit and like sat there for like a solid 2 minutes. And he was like, that was my fault. Like, I did that.
Yeah, it's just like digesting like everything that like happened. Yeah, I totally get that for sure.
I love it. It was great. And like I've gotten that feedback a lot from watching people play it, you know, is that no one's like, oh, that's, you know, that's bull. Like I didn't mess that up. Because like I've been replaying a bunch of them. I love these games, but man, they are really just, some of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're antagonistic almost, right? Like decision. Yeah. Like one of my favorite, if I had to pick one Nintendo game of all time to say, like, I think I probably played it the most growing up, it's Mega Man 2, right? Which, oh, yeah, what a great,
those great games game. Are just evil.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, especially Mega Man 2, because there's so many moments where you like jump to that screen scroll and then something is already there, can't dodge it, and then you stun back into a fall and die. And you're like, right. What?
Especially with the way that like Mega Man jumps, too, because he literally just falls like a rock, just like how Simon did in Castlevania 2 and all that.
Exactly, so. Yeah. So we're trying to do away with that, like with the feeling that you were robbed, I guess.
Well, that's when you have to like wrap the hairband around the second player controller so that the right directional pad is pushed.
Well, that does kind of like actually remind me a bit too, because when you mentioned like with like the shrines, actually, there is, I believe, like another shrine anyway, where you find like, I believe it's a book, and it's basically like a parody of the game Genie, like where you can actually put in like codes and stuff too, right?
There is, yeah. We built a code system into the game, which is going to have the number is always changing because, of course, the cool thing about it is they're pretty easy to add in. Some of them are a little bit more laborious. I don't know if you saw one of the ones that's already built into it, but
I saw in the game explain video, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But like, we wanted to have a lot of those, like ranging from minor to like totally off the wall stuff, and some of them are like things that were already stuff that we had like an ability to add in, but like one of the neat things I've been discussing, because this is like one of my roles, right, on the team, is like to figure out how we're going to market stuff, is I really liked the idea that did you guys ever read like old gaming mags? Like I read a lot of.
Oh yeah, of course. Dead, yeah.
Yeah. Like I loved them. And one of the things I loved is like that hardest thing to replicate now, which is the experience of like finding out a secret from your friend directly.
Like instead like of playground or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you like making it so that you can't just Google it, like making it so that we don't just put like a wiki up that tells you all of them, like making it so that I go into like small obscure, forums and just drop a code so that we can have that where people have to like come together and talk about it. Like I would love for us to be able to do that. So that's part of that Game Genie system, is like being able to put a bunch of fun, like stuff in there to amuse ourselves as well as other people. Like that's it. You know, like you said, this is a labor of love. It's definitely I would say it's a risk, but I don't think it is, in that there are enough people who have love for these style of games that if we do a good job, they're going to like it.
I mean, I feel like it's less of a risk now because like this is a really like high time when you have a lot of indie game developers coming out with their own versions of like these like 2D games, or like these games that came out in the 8-bit and 16-bit generations. You know, and like it's just like amazing like to see like all the quality work just kind of coming out of it. I mean, we mentioned like with like The Messenger, with like Shovel Knight, and like so many other games are, you know, that have come out and are still coming out today.
Yeah.
And obviously with like Infernax, that's kind of like continuing that trend, it seems like. And we did mention a bit before also about the pixel art in the game as well, like, you know, still very much kind of staying true to the NES, but like obviously there's like some things in there that the NES wouldn't be able to actually handle.
Right.
One thing that does come to mind for me actually is like whenever you do like say like a beat like a big boss, for example, and like its blood literally like sprays all over you, and so now that blood is like literally like part of your sprite, it's like dripping off of you and all that. Can you get like a little bit in terms of the the sprite work and like how you make all that work?
Yeah, sure. That's actually a pretty cool system too. So your sprite is, you know, like a sprite, as you would assume, but there is an actual like logic system behind you being covered in gore, where as you're attacking enemies, there's like an incremental like tracking going on that will start piling up gore on you if you continuously are fighting without taking a break or anything.
I noticed that actually, like with the the boss like at the gate when you're saving like the village, I believe, and he sprays like purple blood on you, I think, or he throws up on you. I forget exactly.
He does. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, you have that on top of like the red blood that you had like with the monster before him, you know?
Right. And if you don't fight for a while, as you're moving, you'll see there's like a little drip animation. And that's actually like, it is actually slowly reducing over time.
It's like a hidden meter kind of thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. My favorite is like right now, and I don't know if it'll make it into production exactly the same, but at the very beginning, when you have that choice to pray or slay, if you choose slay, Shane told me that he just put the slider to like 9999999. So you get the absolute most gore covered you can get from that choice.
He's just walking around dripping like a blood popsicle, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of things we've discussed where like I said, we're still in the polish phase. So we could choose to integrate like options because of the way it is. It's a pullable thing where I was like, wouldn't it be pretty funny to have NPCs acknowledge that it would be weird to have you walk into their shop just entirely covered in blood? Like,
oh, that would be hilarious. That would be amazing. Okay?
How are you? But so it's cool because like, you know, it's not meant to be like a slavish homage, right? Like we're not taking away things that we're able to do with modern tech. It's more of just like it, like I said, that the art is not trying to be anything other than a direct homage to a certain era, but the gameplay is not meant to be slavishly locked into that, because like when you die in even the demo, it gives you the option to continue playing in like a hardcore mode or playing in a casual mode. And the casual mode doesn't actually gate any content in the game, which was really important to us. It's just like a acknowledgement that it's 2020 and people have jobs. So if you want to die and start again at the beginning of that screen, instead of go back to the last time you saved at a shrine, like that's an option. You'll still get to see the whole game. That's fine. The reason it's in there is for those people who like do intentionally just want to make it harder on themselves. Cause there are plenty of people who want that, you know, like they want that purist thing, but like not gating content. Like one of the other things that had been discussed a lot internally too is like an unintended side effect of the methodology of design, when people are like, oh well, you just got to get good, is that you leave behind people who need easier options for accessibility.
Right. And that's like the problem with like going back to those old NES games like today is like it really does gate off a lot of people. And that's why, like, you know, it's great, honestly, whenever you have like, you know, say like remasters or like collections of these games that come out and like they add in like rewind options or being able to, you know, add like save states or whatever. Yeah. It just like makes it so that, you know, the people, you know, even for like the people like me who did grow up on these games, you know, obviously we're not as like attuned like with like that level of difficulty in video games as we were back when we were kids. So even playing those games today after not having played them for many years, we're gonna get our asses kicked in them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been shocked at how bad I am compared to like I don't know how 6 year old me was better at games than 30s me. Like I'm a mid 30s and man, my reaction time has slowed down. Like
there's a lot of like Nintendo games and stuff I've downloaded on the Xbox where I'm like, yep, nope.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so that's like a side effect. We talk about that stuff internally. Part of that's because we're good friends with the crew at like Stack Up, who, you know, like one of their dudes, Dave, who's like a good friend of ours, has a prosthesis. So like we always try and like run stuff by him to see like with Just Shapes and Beats, like, hey, how hard is this to play for you? And like just keeping in mind accessibility options, even for a retro inspired game, is important, you know.
Yeah. I mean, having more options, I feel like, is better than less, honestly, especially in this day and age. And like, you know, just having more people being able to play your game, I mean, that's only going to benefit you in the long run and benefit everyone as well. So, yeah. So that's definitely really cool. So I believe people can find out more information on Infernax over at infernax.com, right?
Yeah, they can. And then also the easiest way, we don't really have like an active single social media thing going on for Infernax right now, just because we're still pretty far, you know, we just don't like to talk about stuff too far ahead of time.
Yeah.
we're just quiet. You know, like we are a small studio and we are doing well and we're happy. So we try not to, we don't hype, you know, like we like people to be excited when it's like soon. And so you could follow us on our like company Twitter. That's the one that you're most likely to get any news, which is just at Berserk Studio. But yeah, that's where you're going to find all that stuff.
Choose your character.
So that's going to lead us now into the part of the show, which some of you may remember, is Random Selects. So this is a yes or no 15 question game to guess which video game character that I am this week. So basically, it's going to be Jeremy and Hunter acting as a team to ask yes or no questions, guess which video game character that I am. Usually I would have like, you know, hints like after like a certain number of questions, but we'll do it without the hints. We'll go with hard mode, I guess, like for today in light of Infernax and all the other games that we were like talking about here, like during this episode. So no hints, but you two are working as a team here. So whenever you're ready, you can start with the first yes or no question.
Do you want the first one?
I don't know. I feel like we're kind of being put on the spot here.
Yeah. that's the idea.
We got to narrow down the age range, right? That's a good way to do it. Let's see. How about, are you from a game that has come out in the last 5 years?
Like, am I in a game that's come out in the last 5 years?
Did you originate in a game?
Originate,
in
no.
The last 5 years?
No.
Okay.
Not originate, anyway.
Are you a Nintendo character?
No.
Okay.
All right, that takes care of a lot of the icons.
Yeah, where are we cut down a few? let's see. Are you the main character?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have a friend named Cortana?
No.
Are you from an RPG?
No. That's okay. A five now.
All right.
Are you a thief?
No.
Is your game from a Japanese developer?
Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to figure out the most broad questions to cut down the largest amount of swaths.
My experiences with Japanese developers are Capcom, Konami.
See, that's like, so we know it's not an RPG, though.
So that takes care of all the JRPGs.
Right.
Because there's a whole, that's like, there's libraries full of those.
Let's see. And you're not a thief, all right. And the main character. Are you named after an animal?
No.
Okay, so it's not Metal Gear.
Do you have an issue with zombies?
I would have an issue with zombies, yes.
Oh, wait, hold on. Hold on. I'm starting to think about this here. Well, I got it. Are you from a platformer?
Yes.
All right.
That's 10 now.
All right.
Well, that wipes out Silent Hill and Resident Evil.
I'm thinking Konami. Oh, I guess we could just ask.
Are you Simon Belmont?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We got there.
Woohoo. Da, 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 da. There you go. Yeah.
Simon Remember Belmont how poorly animated he was in the Super Mario Brothers show with that giant
front chin? Oh, yes. Oh, well, the one I was thinking of actually was from the Captain N show. Remember Simon Belmont and that? He's just like a pompous ass, basically, with holding a mirror and always trying to steal the girl from Captain N.
Yeah. I'm shocked we got there with some questions to spare. Nice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So awesome job there, guys. So you got Simon Belmont there in Random Select. So nice little return for Random Select, and we'll definitely try to integrate that more into the episodes going forward, back into it anyway.
What happened to him? Because it's all Trevor now. Like, what did Trevor do to become the famous Belmont?
He got his own Netflix show. That's basically what happened.
A damn good Netflix show.
It is very good. It is very good. I still have to watch season 3, so I'm definitely going to be watching that very soon, I think. But yeah, thanks again, guys, for coming onto the show, and I'll let you start off here, Hunter. Where could people go in order to find you online?
Oh, yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Bond, Hunter Bond. And then, like I said, if you want to check out any of the stuff I do for work, that's berserkstudio.com, B-E-R-Z-E-R-K studio.com. And my friends and I actually do have a podcast where we talk about games news, but we always do it way too late for it to be relevant. That's called Press Pass. And you can check that out at press2reset.com.
Very cool. Nice. Jeremy.
You can follow me on Twitter at Toaster McGee or at Ill Popcorn, which is the podcast I do. You can also find the podcast on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes and Spreaker.com.
And I just want to give a shout out here to our patrons, Francisco Limas, Mac the Ball, Michael Butler, and Rosaline Della Russo. That's everyone who is $2 and up. So thank you very much to those who are helping support the show. And if you too would also like to support the show, you could check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/rcast. We can see all the different perks and such, different ways basically for you to help support the show, and some really cool perks along the way. If you'd like to send us any feedback, opinions, retro games, or topics for us to cover, or anything at all, really, you can email us at rcast@retrozap.com, and be sure to check out retrozap.com for all sorts of other amazing podcasts. It's your home away from home if you're crazy about Star Wars, Animaniacs, or pop culture in general. There's also us with Rcast, so be sure to find us on iTunes to subscribe, give us 5 stars, and tell your neighbors. We're also on Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, so there's absolutely no reason to not follow another retro gaming podcast. And you can also follow the Rcast on Twitter at ARG Podcast, same thing with Facebook, facebook.com/ARG Podcast, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Guilty Man. And yeah, that is Rcast episode 202 in the books, and until next time, keep it retro.
Hi, this is John J.P. Podlasek of Game Dev Advice. I'm a 30-year veteran of the game development industry and have a podcast where I interview artists, animators, programmers, designers, CEOs, and all different types of people that work in the game development industry. Whether you're an aspiring or an experienced game developer, you'll find useful, thought-provoking, and sometimes funny advice on the podcast, so check it out.